You're listening to Leading and Learning. This is the place where we talk about practical leadership, theology, fitness, how to create winning habits, and so much more. My name's David Spell, and I'm a retired police officer, a pastor, a New Testament scholar, and a leadership coach. My goal on Leading and Learning is to help you live your best life. Thanks so much for joining us today. Welcome back to Leading and Learning. This is episode number 424, Training Your Church Safety Team, Part 3. So this has been a longer episode than I wanted, but I also wanted to make sure that I focused at least a little bit on each of the topics that your church safety team needs to be trained in. Obviously, there's levels of training. There's levels of expertise when we talk about defensive tactics. There's levels of training for first aid, for firearms qualifications, and for that level of expertise. But there needs to be at least some amount of time devoted to these things to have an effective church safety ministry. We're talking about protecting the flock, protecting the church. So it's very, very important that we train our team. And even if you have to spend some money, pastor, associate pastor, administrator, whatever it takes, spend the money. I'm very blessed because in my church environment, our pastors have sent numerous members of our church safety team, some of the leaders, some of the members, to various church training seminars and extra training, and they've spent the money so that we could go and be trained to come back and train the other team. So just a quick recap, when we're talking about training, we talked about, first of all, a couple of weeks ago, initial firearms training and the yearly qualification, about why that's important. We talked about judgmental shooting and simulator training if you have access to that. We talked about use of force continuum and having a state law refresher at least once a year. At least once a year, you need to go through what the law says about the use of force and what type of force is legal and what's not. CPR, basic first aid, that's usually on a bi-yearly basis. I think that's how long ours go. Has to be renewed, or supposed to be renewed, every couple of years. Defensive tactics, being able to control a violent person in church who's being disruptive, a violent assailant, whatever that might be. Active shooter training, and there's so much great training available. Again, you may have to spend some money for it, but there's so much great training out there if you're just willing to look. Room clearing is a very, very important skill to have, even if it's not something that you would do all the time, but it's definitely something to know. Tactical communication, verbal judo, de-escalation, that type of thing. We talked about advanced firearms training. Does your team go beyond just getting that initial certificate from an NRA-certified instructor, like I recommended, and get extra training? What about other weapons? Obviously, I'm talking to a church safety, from a context of a church safety team that's armed, but what about an unarmed team? Or even adding other weapons, whether it might be a taser or pepper spray or pepper foam, or even though I don't necessarily think it's a very good idea for church safety, is a collapsible baton, but it might be an option for some. And then the last one we talked about last week was the emergency evacuation of your building during active shooters, active assailants, or even natural disasters, or a fire. If there's a fire drill, obviously in a natural disaster, you'd probably stay inside. But if there's a fire drill, if you have a fire in the building, how do you evacuate people? Do you have a plan for getting your people out of the building? So today I want to jump back in with number 12, positioning inside your auditorium. One of the things we've done as a team, and this is something I could not recommend strongly enough, is take your team, your safety team, your safety ministry, and even your senior pastor, if he has trouble kind of buying into this idea of needing a safety team, and show how quickly someone can get to the stage. It really, really doesn't take any time at all for someone to approach the stage, to attack the pastor even during his sermon. And if you don't believe it happens, just get on YouTube and type it in. It happens more than we want to talk about. And my particular church a few years ago, during a message, pastor was preaching and someone who had emotional issues got up and walked down the aisle and approached the pastor while he was preaching, stopped right in front of him, was maybe 4 or 5 feet away. As he started moving, when he passed me, I was sitting on the front row. I followed him. Didn't appear to be a violent threat. The pastor acknowledged him. The guy reached out his hand to shake hands. I wasn't crazy about that because I didn't know what the person was going to do. But they didn't mean any harm. And then as soon as the pastor shook hands with him and acknowledged him, again, we're talking about it in the middle of his sermon. You know, I tapped the person on the shoulder and I said, "Hey, let's go sit down." And they looked at me with a very blank, faraway look in their eyes, nodded, and I took them back to where their family was. This was an adult, probably somebody in their 20s with mental and emotional issues, and they just got away from their family. But what if this had been a violent assailant? They were at the stage before most people on the front row, which is where most of our leaders sit, even had any idea what was going on. So it can happen very quickly. So when we talk about positioning inside the auditorium, we've gone through, we've found the most direct routes to the stage. We've timed ourselves. What's the quickest we can get to the stage? If an assailant, we've even run through scenarios where we'll have somebody sitting on the second, third, fourth, fifth row, and they decide they're going to get up and charge the stage. How fast can I get a safety team member there to interdict and stop the attack? So definitely something to consider. How are you going to position your people inside the auditorium? Another thing to consider is, and I see this all the time, we really don't want to get into the habit of positioning our safety team members in the middle of a row. If something bad happens, they're probably not going to be able to get out in time to respond. So I think looking at what your scenario is, what your situation is, maybe positioning your people, on the end of rows on either side of the auditorium, close to the stage. We also have people positioned in the back, but you figure out what's going to work for you, but it's something to look at. Number 13, protecting your pastors. And then we'll also throw in here providing security for guest speakers. One of the trends that I've noticed looking at many, many, many different church attacks over the last 5, 10, 15 years is the pastor is often the target of the attacks. Now, this is not true in every case. We've had some active shooters where the person just comes in and they're wanting to kill as many people as they can. But in many, many church attacks, the pastor has been the person who the bad guy was coming in. Maybe they think the pastor gave bad advice to his wife. In a couple of cases, he thinks him and his wife were involved in doing something they shouldn't have been doing. Maybe he just doesn't like pastors. So we always want to put a safety team member around your pastor, our pastor, your pastor, when they're interacting with people. It doesn't have to be intimidating. I tell my safety team members all the time, we're not bouncers, we're not the Secret Service, but we also want to be close enough to respond if there's any type of threat. And sometimes the pastors aren't really crazy about this because they want to be around the people, which is fine. We're not telling them not to be around the people, but we're also putting a safety team member close by. And the reality is, unless your team's wearing shirts that say safety or security or whatever on it, most people don't know who they are anyway. And I just tell my guys, smile, wave. If they want to shake the pastor's hand, maybe they want to shake your hand, great. After the message, But the main thing is they're close enough to respond if there is a situation. So remember, this is becoming more prevalent. The pastors, they are the lightning rod, if you will, the church. They're the focal point. They're the main contact that people see. Often when they look on the website or in the church, they're preaching. They're the ones leading the service. So we want to make sure our pastors are protected. And then when we talk about guest speakers, this is especially true if you bring in a high-profile speaker. Our church is large enough to where we often bring in high-profile speakers. And the thing with that is you don't know who's following these high-profile speakers. They've got a following on the internet. Some people like them. Some people don't. And you never know who's going to show up once you make it public that this person is going to be speaking, preaching, teaching, ministering at your church. So whenever we have a guest speaker in, it's one of the things we talk about. Does this person rise to the level where we need to put somebody on them? We usually do as a courtesy. But we've had some guest speakers come in that are so high profile, we'll put two safety team members around them just to keep an eye on them, guide them in and out, get them in and out of their car, in and out of the building, whatever it is, just in case, because that's going to bring in visitors, and you just don't know who's going to be coming in to hear or possibly be disruptive or even possibly cause harm to that guest speaker. Go away. We will be right back. I wanted to let you know this episode of Leading and Learning is brought to you by my new book, Diablo's Dust. Diablo's Dust is book 5 in the exciting Chuck McCain series. And if you don't know who Chuck McCain is, read a copy. Get a copy of the book. Read. Go to Amazon. Read the first chapter or two for free with that free preview. But listen, it's exciting reading. It's a lot of fun. I don't know about you, but I read a lot of heavy stuff. And sometimes it's good just to kind of relax, you know, kind of kick in the creative part of your brain and just enjoy some good fiction. And Diablo's Dust is about the war on terror. There's police officers. There's bad guys. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of thrills. And I think this is something that you're really going to enjoy. And, you know, one of the things I've had people ask me about in this particular novel, I talk about the criminal cartels in Mexico. When I was a police officer, I dealt with Mexican gangs. I dealt with, gangs from other countries, Asian gangs. That was a big part of what I did as a police officer. And now that I'm writing fiction, I've fictionalized some of this. And I've actually had some people say, you know, you're exaggerating this a little bit, aren't you? And actually what I've told them, I said, no, I actually tone it down because I don't think people would believe it if I actually told them how bad these gangs are. So definitely something to check out. Click on that link, go to Amazon, read the first chapter or two for free, see what you think, grab a copy. I know you will love it. All right, well, we're back. We just talked about protecting our pastors and our guest speakers. Number 14, we want to protect the children. Do you have a plan in place to protect your children? Do you have a method? Do you have a way to lock down the children's wing of your church? Does your children's ministry, do they practice fire drills? Our kids' ministry leader at church, they told me, this is a year or two ago, they said, hey, listen, I want to let you and the safety team know that we're going to be doing a fire drill this Sunday. And I thought, what a brilliant idea. Kids do fire drills in school. Why not do a fire drill at church? If there's an emergency, if there's a fire, if there's some other emergency, we need to get the children out, let's practice doing it. This is something we usually don't think about, but it just makes sense. What about if there's somebody who wants to harm the kids? Do you have a plan in place to protect the kids? And part of this isn't just the safety team ministry. Part of this is the children ministry. Do you have a check-in, check-out procedure? Who can grab those kids? This can be, again, if there's, you think about it, if you've got a church where maybe there's a divorce taking place and there's a custody issue. We've seen this. and the parent will show up who does not have custodial rights and think they can check out their kids. And this is a really, really touchy subject. It's a very gray area, but you know, what do you do? So it's definitely a consideration. It's definitely a conversation to have with your children's leaders, those who oversee that ministry, and also the safety team. And really, the safety team should be in the know if there is something like this going on. I always let my team know, as part of the pastoral team, if I hear that there's a custody battle, some type of divorce issue that may spill over in church. One of the things my team understands, that when you become a part of the safety team, there's a confidentiality aspect to this job, to this ministry. And so, they need to know these things so that they won't be surprised. So do you have a plan for protecting your children? Number 15, what about your parking lot? Is this a possible area that you need to patrol and keep safe? Usually at least once or twice during every service, someone from our safety team will go do a sweep through the parking lot. We've been in our building for about 20 years, and I think we've had maybe 3 or 4 cars broken into, which is actually pretty good for that amount of time. They haven't all been during the church time, but there's been a couple that have been broken into during church services. This is before we had the safety ministry. And so it's definitely something to think about. Keeping a check on the parking lot, especially meetings at night. You know, for the longest time, we didn't have the greatest lights in our parking lot. It's much better now. And so we would always make sure we escorted people out to the dark recesses of the parking lot and looking out for women, children, those who are heading out to their vehicles at night. It's definitely something that we want to keep an eye on, and we want to protect our people. Because again, we're not just protecting the flock, we're protecting the property and as their property as well when they come to church. And you may be in a, you know, little country church or rural area, it might not be something that you have to worry about. But if you're in more of an urban environment that we are, it's definitely something we have to keep a constant check on. We have a large homeless community in our area. It's not uncommon at all to have them in our parking lot. You know, coming up panhandling, trying to get money out of our members as they're on their way in or on their way out. It's good to have a good relationship with the local police. There have been a number of times where we've had to give criminal trespass warnings to people who just continued to come back and harass church members trying to get money out of them as they're going out to their cars. So definitely something to keep an eye on. You know, we always want to, especially at night, when we're having night meetings, you know, make sure your safety team's equipped with flashlights so that they can go out. We also have reflective vests that we wear at night, but they go out so they can be seen. The last night meeting we had a car that kept driving slowly through the parking lot. And one of my safety team members finally, after the second or third time, started to kind of walk briskly across the parking lot to it, shining its light at it, and finally the car shot off and didn't come back. So it's always a possibility. We want to keep that parking lot safe. Watch the cars. Look out for what's going on out there. And your people will feel much safer and more secure. And then the last one, number 16, what is the spiritual component that your safety team provides? You know, one of the things I tell my guys is we want to have, you know, the heart, the mind of a warrior, but we want to have the heart of a shepherd. And we should just as easily be able to pray for somebody as we are looking out for threats. Excuse me. We want to watch out for our people. There's times that as on the safety team, you know, we may be called upon to pray for people. One of my safety team leaders was dealing with a woman who was dealing with an emotional issue. She was right on the verge of having a nervous breakdown in the lobby, and it was starting to get a little bit ugly, and he said, "Hey, can I pray for you?" And she didn't know he was a security guy, safety team member. She thought maybe he was one of the pastors, and she's like, well, yeah. And he prayed for her, calmed her down, and that kind of resolved the situation. So as a safety team, we always understand there's a spiritual component. Now, I get it. If you're the guy in charge, everybody joining your team may not be at the same level spiritually, but then it's up to you as much as possible to disciple those team members, to take them on a journey. You know, we start each Sunday with a huddle where we get together, we talk about if there's anything going on, what's the service going to look like today, are there any curveballs, anything that's going to be interesting, anything we need to know about, any threats on the horizon, and then we always pray together, and we pray for each other before we go and do our thing. So the spiritual component is very, very important. I tell my guys all the time, we're not bouncers, we're not Secret Service agents, we are a safety team, a safety ministry in our local church. And so that means we're protecting, but sometimes that may mean we're praying. And whatever that looks like is okay. I'm going to wrap up there. That's 16 elements of training that I would encourage you to make a part of your safety team ministry. Document it. Every time we do any kind of training, we always document it. I put a list of who was there, the date, what we covered, and that goes in a file on Google just so that we always have it. Now, if you would like a copy of this list, maybe you missed one of the episodes and you don't have time to go back and listen, if you will email me, david@davidspell.com, and just ask for the training list, I'll send you the notes from this episode, from the last three episodes, and give you the list, the training, and these points that we talked about. I think it will really help you. So just email me, no cost. I'll just, you know, send it back to you in a PDF or reply in the email, and that way you will have it. Make sure you check out my website, davidspell.com. Look at all my resources there. There's some that are free, plenty that are free. Got some blogs, you know, every week. Got podcasts like this one. My books are up there if you want to grab some more books. There's all kinds of great resources. And while you're at davidspell.com, make sure you sign up to get my free newsletter. Well, friends, I hope this has helped you. If you do have any questions about church safety, reach out to me. We'd love to help you if we can help establish, get your safety team ministry established in your church so that you can protect the flock as well. Well, friends, thanks for being with me. We'll see you next week on Leading and Learning.